Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Now, when you consider people who find themselves with extra cash and what they can face is a dilemma, right? What to do with that extra money? Should you use that money to pay off or at least pay down some debt, right? That pile of debt you've accumulated over time. Or do you want to be wise and think, maybe let me double this money and maybe put it to more advantageous work, such as putting the money in investments that will grow for the future. And when you now pay off the debt, it's a once-off thing. Don't take my word for it. I won't be able to answer you on that one. Fortunately, we joined on the line by Mr. Mlamuli Mbambo, who is an author of Winning the Money Game. And he joins us now on the line to help us in this conversation. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the Business Sense here on AWR.
Good evening, Derek and listeners. Thank you so much for having me today.
Only a pleasure, sir. Trusting that we find you well. It's a Monday. Hope the weekend was good.
The weekend was so fulfilling. I did a financial education talk at a church yesterday, and it was very fulfilling.
I can imagine. I think, like you're saying there, when you do that kind of work, and I think that people are also receptive, you really feel like, you know what, I did my portion. You go to bed and your heart is content, you're full. We thank you for that, and we appreciate you that even after such a fulfilling weekend, you still have time for us here on the radio. We say thank you to that.
No, it's a pleasure. I'm just grateful to get these platforms, you know, to have this conversation, because, you know, even when I do this at churches, it's very clear that I think there's a misunderstanding of what the gospel says and how we interpret the financial issues.
True. And I think one of those that is sometimes misunderstood is one we're going to be touching today, the issue of investing. Sometimes people think, investing, it means you don't trust God with the future.
But you don't have faith.
But hey, maybe let's jump straight into our conversation for this evening, Mr. Mbambo. Investing, paying debts. Maybe let's start off before we go deeper with noting some of the differences between these two, because it seems like it's money departing from you. How do you note the difference when you say where to put money? Do you invest or do you pay off your debts, therefore leaving quote unquote freer money on your end?
Okay, so I like that. I actually haven't heard that interpretation before. That in both instances, it's actually money departing. It's actually money departing from you. So how I would look at it is, remember the parable of the farmer and the type of soil that he was throwing his seeds in. So I would say that bad debt, because there's also good debt. But in terms of, but I think today we're discussing bad debts that you shouldn't have gotten into. So bad debt, think of it as bad soil and infertile soil. So you're throwing your seeds there, but nothing is really going to manifest or harvest from there, because the underlying reasons for throwing your or for taking your money there, maybe ego, pride, proving to people, materialistic, those kind of things. So the energy and the whys, the energy and the reasons for that money departing from you are probably bad.
Okay.
When you go into bad debt, so now they will not then harvest anything. Means that money is gone forever, and it won't come back and pay you back. Whereas in investing, you've got a better why. Why is the future. Maybe there's a vision of doing something positive, or there's a vision of producing something. You know, the Genesis, it says we must produce fruit and multiply. So you are planting to start that fruit. That fruit could be a business. It could be a rental property. It could be a unit trust. you know, there's so many different investments, because a lot of times people only think of the one type of investment, whereas in Ecclesiastics, it actually says that, but divide your investments among many places, for you do not know what risk might lie ahead. So what I say is you need to look at investments broadly, not only paper assets. Look at the different things. And another way to consider, something else to consider, is that if all your time is spent in one place, that's also a form of not diversifying. If all your income comes from one stream, as in just your salary or only your business, that's also something you need to diversify. And if you only have one skill, you really need to diversify, because the way the world is going now, things change so quickly that if you're only reliant on one skill, you might find yourself redundant.
I like that. I like that. And I think it's something that we struggle with, especially the older folk, I would say. They you know, the group which always says, go to work, get a skill and get a job and die in that one job. You know, create this 50-year work employment history with the one company. They feel there is still that credence, I guess, to do that. But the younger crowd, I think, is a bit more diverse and a bit more wanting to dabble in many things, and there might be a bit more winning in this. And you mentioned this idea of paper investment. Maybe just explain as to what you're meaning there for our listeners.
Okay. Sorry, I think I skipped a step. Just to explain something on the fundamental question that you asked. Sorry, I think I went
you went
spiritual.
A bit ahead. Okay.
Yeah, let me be technical.
All right.
So the thing is, with debts, typically most debts, the interest rate that you are paying would be higher than a typical investment vehicle, right? So what I usually say when I'm doing the coaching thing is, prioritize the debt, but let's have a percentage. So we'll say 60% or 70%, depending on the situation that the client is in, will go to decrease those debts. So we'll look at your debts and say which ones have the highest interest rate, as in which ones are penalizing you the most
for having
having had that debt.
And we
put 70% into that, and then we put 30% into investments, because it's good to build the habit. Because also Ecclesiastics 11:4 says, the farmer who waits for perfect weather conditions will never actually plant.
You will never plant.
So the majority of it, yes, goes to trying to chase down that debt and bring it down, because it's penalizing you. But also have a smaller percentage that investing, so that you're building the habit of actually planting.
I like that. Build the habit. So even if it's going to be minimal, it might not reap that much rewards, but at least you're used that you need to be doing that. Tomorrow, when you have more freer in terms of capital, you can know what to do with it, because you're kind of used to that, if I'm hearing you well.
No, perfectly well. Because so many times in our lives, we wait for the perfect time and say, you know what, Mla, you see, when I'm earning 20,000, I will come for a session with you and we'll do all of these things correctly. But what happens is the habits that you form at your 10,000 follow you to your 100,000, follow you to your million. And if you win the lotto, we see you on I blew it, because the habits are fundamentally incorrect.
I became speechless there for a second. That is profound. That is profound. And I guess that's why it doesn't matter. It's not about how much is in the bank. It's about the habits. It's about the attitude. That's what's most important.
Yes, because yesterday when I was having the dialogue with the church, usually I say money follows value.
Okay.
But a young minister actually argued that money follows habits. And I was in agreement. I was like, actually,
it makes sense.
He's got a very strong point. Money does follow our habits.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if it's coincidental or something was really happening, because at our church we were also talking money this past weekend. And the presenter, he's a financial manager at a school. And he was speaking on how you can actually trace someone's character in the way they spend money. I don't need to know you as a person. I just need to look at your finance sheet and I can tell you exactly who you are. And it's like, wow, that's profound. And I'm reminded, it was Jim Rohn, I know I've quoted him earlier this evening as well, who speaks, who is an author like yourself, who speaks and says, money is funny. And it's not about equality, because sometimes we want to argue, no, it's the 1%, it's the 1%. It's got nothing to do with that. Mm. In fact, if you take all the money that is belonging to the 1% and you distribute it equally among everybody, give it about a year, it will be back exactly in those 1% again, which means it's again, like you're saying, about attitude. It's about the mindset when it comes to this money thing, isn't it?
No, it's so amazing you say that, Derek, because in the book, there's a chapter around budgeting.
Uh-huh.
And the acronyms of the budgeting system, I call it the Manifundi Typeaway budgeting system.
Okay.
I think we all remember Typeaway. There are family members we don't speak to because they did not bring back Typeaway. you know, it's that deep.
Okay, I wasn't aware of those ones.
No, it's usually for the aunts. Your mom they would or your know it aunt better, right? does not speak to another aunt because can you type away
that during didn't some come function back in 1995.
You know, so the type away budgeting system, the acronyms actually spell I see self.
Mm.
Because once you are aware how you budget your money and how you spend it, you actually see yourself. Because many parents, for example, would say that my kids are the most important thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at their spending habits, you might notice that the car is the most important thing in their life financially.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that is profound. That is profound. And I think it's a pity, because the issue is really that we don't spend enough time being honest with what we're doing with money. And so sometimes these things and what's actually of value to us kind of passes us over and we don't see it. You make mention of bad debt, and you make mention of investments. Now, we were just speaking earlier on regarding our myth busting to say, those who say, no, it's too risky to invest, don't do it. To say, no, it's investing is risky. There is truth to that. Maybe not too risky that you can say, let's discard it. But investment is kind of risky because you can lose it all. That's what investing is, right? You're hoping you win out, but sometimes you don't win out. How do you now differentiate between bad debt that you were mentioning earlier on and investing, which can also be a bad way of dealing with your money?
Okay, so with bad debts, you kind of know that it will never manifest. It will never be a harvest.
Mm, mm,
you know, you've put it there.
There's no possibility whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. You are probably happy for maybe a day or a week or something, but that has fizzled off, and now we are sola, and now you have to sort this thing out, right? That's a given. Whereas with investment, yes, there are risks, but Benjamin Franklin said, an investment in knowledge pays the best interest.
Okay.
What I find is that a lot of people lead with money and don't lead with knowledge when they invest. And what I always say is that the highest risk you can take in investing is putting money in stuff you don't understand.
Yeah.
Right. And yes, I know we've got big financial companies, and that's all good and well, and they will do their best to kind of keep you protected. But the best protection you can take is for you yourself to understand what's going on.
Mm.
You know, because think of it as getting into a Ferrari and driving, but you don't have a driver's license and you don't know how to drive. Ferrari is an amazing car. It's a great car, suspension, gear. Sorry, I'm not a car fan, so I don't really know these things much. But you can appreciate that it's a very good car.
It's a machine,
But because you can't drive, you will go smack bang into a tree.
Yeah, and then by the way, I'm sorry to just jump in there. You then blame the car. This car doesn't change gears nicely. It's you.
And it's you. Yeah. So now you blame the fund or you blame the property deal or you blame. But if you knew what you were doing when you were reading, you would have known the risk and the terms and the timelines. Because, for example, I get quite a few people who say, put my money in there 2 years. It's actually there's less money than I put in. But if you understand investments, you understand that there's a dip and a high and a dip and a high.
Yeah.
And if you are at the dip stage, don't take your money out at a loss. Wait for the stage where it goes up.
Indeed. And that's not the time to buy as well. That's not the time to buy when it's peak. It's not the time for you to spend money on that thing.
It's not the exactly. Yeah. So be a farmer. And make sure that you're tilting that soil and learning what that right soil time. And what moves that soil and what nourishes that soil, and then plant the seeds.
So is that what you would say is the best way to find what to prioritize in? Is forget everything else. Don't even bother about how much money you have at the point in time. Rather gain knowledge. And be well fed in terms of knowledge and not just trusting to say, no, I think Mlai is good in this finance thing. Hey, Baba, here's 10,000 rand. Do with my money what you will. Is that not also a good way to say, let me rather trust the people who know what they're doing?
So that's a beautiful question, Derek. So what I say is, think of it this way. You are the coach.
Okay.
In the money game, let's say you would be the coach.
All right. All right.
And you have a team. You have what I would call a money team. Mm-hmm. So you have your banker, you have your financial advisor, you have your business partners, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But as the coach, if you don't know how this game works, even if the players are brilliant, it might not work out. One. Two,
okay.
If I'm a great player and I see that my coach really does not know what's cooking, I might do something unethical because I know the chances of that coach catching picking me are very low. So for example, I was watching this movie last week. who's that? The fried guy, man. We all have his grill. George Foreman, yes.
Oh, yes, 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 yeah.
Yeah, so George Foreman was a boxer at 25. He had a revelation from God, and then he chose to become a pastor.
Okay.
He had made a lot of money in boxing. He trusted his friend who was, you know, like he's deemed more money smart.
Okay.
And his friend invested in very risky things. And I think he was about 35, so like 9, 10 years. No, probably like 8 years later.
Okay.
They lost everything. And he had to go back to boxing. To make money, but fortunately, God willing, God made him a champion again. Okay. And then thereafter, he was very much aware where his money is going and planted.
He became a true coach now, not just someone who is on the sidelines making bets. Ah, that is a powerful illustration. And I think that's the challenge, right? And I love how the honesty you're saying that sometimes when the players realize the coach is not too aware, he knows that the coach is just going to be cheering on. Oh, did you see that skill that my player did? No, that skill is going to cost you. That's going to cost you. And you need to be a bit more savvy with that.
So, yes, and if you don't know a few things, the players, you might end up paying the players too much. So for example, one of the key determinants, especially of your retirement annuity and very long-term investments, is the fees that you've accepted to pay.
Okay.
Notice that I say accepted to pay.
Okay.
You might not have had to pay them because you can negotiate.
Okay. All right. But yeah, you're not too
aware.
But you
don't even know what those fees are.
And I think what I'm hearing here is it's not really the question about to invest or to pay debt. It's more a question of be financially savvy, be financially literate. Otherwise, either way will be useless for you.
Not useless, Derek. That's very morbid.
No, because like seriously.
but there will be injuries.
And unnecessary ones as well.
I also share a coin here and there.
And these are things that you can avoid.
As it could be.
Yeah. Mla, earlier on you spoke about good debt, bad debt. Hey, that's been one that I think it depends on which financial advisor you speak to. You get kind of different answers to that. Is there such a thing as good debt? I mean, or is it maybe personal to say, no, for me, I think this debt is good for me?
I like that. Okay, so how I define good debt is that this debt has a high probability of paying for itself.
Okay. Okay.
Right. So here's a typical example. Let's say a mobile fridge is, I don't know, 50,000-60,000. I'm not in the business.
Okay.
That's incorrect.
Okay.
So let's call it 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then I would calculate that. Okay. For me to take a loan of 50,000 to purchase this mobile fridge, how many events do I need to take the mobile fridge to in order to make my money back?
Pay back?
So
okay.
Let's say the mobile fridge renting thing is 1,000 rand a day. Most people rent it for 2 days.
Yeah.
So let's call it 2,000, right? Then I will say 50,000 divided by 2,000. I will get that number. And if it looks like a number of events that I can get my mobile fridge to within the space of maybe 24 months, given or the timeline of the loan, then I know what, okay, at event, I don't know, event, what is it, 25? Yeah, at event 25, I've now made the 50,000. Maybe I need another 5 events to cover the interest.
Okay.
And thereafter, this asset, which should live for 5 years, the next 3 years, all that money is just money coming in.
Okay.
You see how it's paid itself back and then some profit.
So would that count as a debt or as an investment?
So in the line item, it's a debt because you took
it's
a loan
expense,
for 50,000, but you're not paying it from your own pocket and other proceeds.
All
you
right.
are renting out the mobile fridge. Client is paying you and you're taking a percentage of that money and you're paying back the loan. And then you get to a stage where the loan is paid up, but you still have the mobile fridge and you're still hiring it out and you're still making money.
Hmm.
That's where debt now is like leverage.
Okay.
Think of it. And also when we do our degrees, when you do a degree, you take the debt in the hopes that you pass your degree and
you
then
get a job.
The job that you get is what we'll pays
pay
that back.
That.
And and obviously that carries on years after you've paid your student loan.
So this idea that we sometimes have, no, a house is a good debt. It might not be so true because that thing is not going to pay you nothing. You're just living in it.
That's also debatable. So the house will generate equity. And what most people do when they get old, they downsize, especially when the kids have left.
True.
And then at that moment where you then sell it, that's when we'd have to do the calculation of has this become an asset or was it a net loss? So we live in a society where people just love black and white, whereas a lot of things are actually gray. But when you talk about things in a gray, you talk about the gray area, it doesn't really excite everyone. People want to follow that extreme side. They want to follow the guy who says property will always make you money, regardless of how little you know about it. Or Ubers are guaranteed. No, there's no guarantees.
There's no such.
A lot of things are probability analysis, likelihoods, and then knowledge, and you take a calculated risk. But that doesn't sell. You wouldn't want to buy that program.
Yeah, that is true. And I think it's a pity because I think it's also the environment we are living in. We've got this big desire and draw towards instantaneous things, especially things that we can see on the dotted line to say, like you're saying, the black and white, right? If I do this, I immediately get this, then that makes sense as an investment to us. This to say, no, look at it from this angle and over time, but that's too much for us. And also another thing, like you're saying, it depends, right? Especially with the house example, because this downsizing thing is not a big thing in the black community, I must say. That's the thing. You cannot do that. You know, this is our home. I bought this with my sweat and tears. You know, in fact, we think we're going to pass it down to the children. My children must have a place to stay when I die. That's how we think about it. Not even when I retire.
The house is in Durban. Your kids stay in Cape Town.
When I die, they must have a place to call home. Like, okay, I don't get it.
But they stay in Cape Town and Joburg.
And better yet, they've got their own houses. What do you mean when you die?
Yes. For me, if it's a family farm, mm-hmm. yes,
yeah, maybe from that perspective, that. true.
But if it's a house in a suburb somewhere, if I'm staying in Joburg, I'm not gonna move back down to Durban to stay at that suburb.
At a family home, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it then maybe time that perhaps we might be needing to have some conversations with parents to say, hey guys, I know you worked very hard, but look at the reality, Gunje. Would you mind?
I think there's a lot of conversations to have with our more mature parts of our generation. Because, for example, there's an idea that I sometimes discuss, and it's completely up to you.
Okay.
But it is a way that other nations make sure of generational wealth transfer.
Okay.
Right? And so what happens typically is, let's say your mother or your father is 65 and they're retiring, and maybe there's two of you as children.
All right.
They would typically, so sometimes the retirement thing takes long to pay. And also when it pays for most, 94% of people can't afford to retire. So when it pays out, it's not usually what they thought it would be. So mm-hmm. one of the first things they cancel is their life cover. And that means if your mother or dad has been paying life cover for 20 years, all that money has basically been... It's just gone.
It's a waste, yeah.
Right? So what other nations do, they say, mom or dad, you are retiring. As your kids, we will pay that premium.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Right? And not that we want you to die next year, ma. No.
Then we benefit.
That's not it. That it's your tagata, ma. No. It's an economic strategy, generational wealth transfer, because mm-hmm. you pay that maybe 5-7 years. Unfortunately, it happens what happens. And now that family has capital to either start something as a family trust or a family fund or whatever they want to call it,
mm-hmm.
or the kids get that money separately to start whatever they want to start. But in a way, that is a strategy that other nations have used to break that generational curse of struggling.
And it's important, eh? It is. Very
it's a
important.
Difficult conversation, but it's a very important because think of that policy then lapses, and it's been 20 years of your mom or dad paying it. It's a lot of money down the drain.
Nice. The challenge is, and here maybe is also another difficult conversation, is sometimes they end up doing that because, like you're saying, the younger kids are not available. The kids, rather, are not available to then take over that installment or that payment of that life insurance or whatever it is that the parents were covering. And now they might, at some extent, still need to take care of these guys who are in their 30s now or even 40s, and they haven't done really much with their life. And the parents are like, you know what? I still need to do something or take care of themselves and leave off that money now because they can't afford. And that's where the challenge is, to say the younger generation is also not really doing much. Some of them, I know that there are others who, like you were saying, hey parents, don't worry, we'll do this, we'll do that, but some of them are just haven't. I don't know if it's something that we should blame them for that, or it's just the reality of life. We're sitting at 30%+ in terms of unemployment, you know, and you're saying, yeah guys, parents,
so with
sorry.
That so I by the way, these are my opinions. I'm not saying this is sacred truth. Mm-hmm. These are just my opinions and my thoughts. And we can have the debate or the dialogue with you or the listeners. So my thoughts are that South Africa doesn't necessarily have an unemployment crisis.
Oh, okay.
We've got a crisis of people not knowing how to generate value in exchange for money.
Mm.
which is code for we have a challenge of people who are not financially literate. Because unfortunately, financial education tends to be taught from a place of don't drink that expensive coffee, drink the cheap one instead. But it extends. That's the one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is when you're truly financially literate, you know what money follows, and money follows perceived value. Notice that perceived value. So you can have a product or service that's very valuable, but if you don't work on the perception of it, we won't spend money with you. So if we were to teach, and I'm trying, I've gotten into a few high schools and tertiary places where I've done the talks and sponsors have sponsored the book, etc. But what I'm saying to the sponsors is a way to combat unemployment is to empower young people to understand how money works and then position themselves or start side hustles or start little things here and there that will bring them 500 rand, 1,000 rand a week or something. And that's the kind of person that you also would want to employ as an employer. Because when they finished high school, they didn't just sit and mope that they don't have funds to carry on, but they started something. And in they starting something, you meet people. In your meeting people, maybe there's a job opportunity. Or if you're lucky, then some of them, maybe the business grows. You know, so most young people think the only way to get a job, to get money, is to have a job, because that was drummed into us. Go to school, get good grades, and you'll get a good job. We don't live in that reality anymore. So we need to give them another option. This other teacher said grade 9 and grade 10s are becoming despondent. It was in Free State, I remember. Are becoming despondent because they see Usipho or Uthabang, who was very smart in school, but uhlezi esprit corner. So why must I work hard in school if I'm just going to Uthabang City? So what he's doing is he's setting up an entrepreneurship type forum thing where he's saying, if you get stuck after matric, here is an option. And then he was going to use the book and the principles here to teach them, this is what you can start. Because for example, in Eastern Cape, the school we went to in Eastern Cape, a lot of those kids come from a place where there's a lot of land. You know, and around that land, there's a lot of, maybe not a lot, but I saw a few farms. Which means they are surrounded by fertile soil. But they're not planting anything.
They're not doing anything,
They're all hoping to come to UKZN or UCT or FITS, and it can't take them all.
And I would even say, in addition to that, there is another generation that's now coming in to say, you know what, I will go to school, spend so much money, and here's a guy who went to school, like you're saying, the smart guy. He's employed, but look at how much he's bringing. He takes a taxi to work. He's got just a small house in the corner. And here are guys who weren't doing so great in school. They're driving machines because they got tenders and whatnot. And there's this shortcut to extra wealth that is also available in our communities. And the youngsters are thinking, why would I want to take that route? Look at how unattractive it is. You know, and that's also another one that you need to then say in that education that's coming through to say, hey, guys, some of it is also unsustainable. And some of it is not for everybody. And are you up, like we were saying, I think I was speaking to somebody, when was this? I forgot when I was having this conversation about somebody who had a parent who tried some business deals and at home they grew up like that. But there were some deals that the father tried because it was lucrative, but then realized, oh, I don't have a stomach for this industry. I think I want to leave this. And there's that as well to say, yeah, you see them making money, but can you do what they're doing to make the money? Is also another question that needs to be asked. Mla.
And the other question is, are you willing to break some of your values?
Exactly.
Or do you have values? Spell it out.
Yeah, it is a big conversation, maybe as we draw towards the close, I want us to hammer down on some of the points you raised. You spoke on, and I want to just repeat this one: this idea of education and how important it is, especially when you're trying to understand between investing and paying off debts. To say, sometimes, and I think you make mention of this, the issue of take note which one has the highest interest. That's education, because if you're just thinking, I've got debts, I've got investment, let me pay off debts first, perhaps the debt has got such a low interest that the interest rate you're going to get from the investment is way more that you would pay just with the interest, the debt here, and you're still making money.
Oh, please tell me when you find it, Derek. Please tell me when you find that one. That would be a unicorn.
Oh, my goodness. But are you saying that there's nothing of that nature?
It could exist, but it's so unlikely.
Rare. It's so rare.
Yeah, but it could exist, but it's unlikely.
Because I was wanting to say, let's talk about this approach you said. Seek the first one with the highest interest rate. You pay those off. Mm. And I wanted to ask to say, obviously, let's say, for example, you've got 10,000 in terms of your free capital, which you're now addressing whether to invest or to pay off the debt. And then you start paying off, chipping off this debt. That's where you're focusing. I think you said 70-30 is the percentage that would be most advisable, to say 70 to the debt, 30% to investment, right?
Well, so it's very dangerous when we just say
put numbers
those things.
Like that.
That's a range.
Okay.
I would need to have the conversation with the person.
To say, let's have a much more closer one.
Let's say 70, 30, 60, 40.
Okay. But anyway, what I was trying to drive at is here now is you've chipped off at the first debt, you've closed it. Sometimes if we're just having a debt conversation, you then say, that extra money, don't use it, put it back into paying the next debt. Now here you are with this question of debt and investing. Would it be advisable to go put it back into more debt, as in to pay off the debts, or would you rather say the extra now that you have that is free, put in investing? I don't know if you get the question. We lost Umlamul. I don't know what happened there. Apologies for that. Let's see if you can try and get him back quickly, so that we can finish off the discussion that we were having. If you just joined us, we are wrapping up. In actual fact, this has been The Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio, SID Media. And we were talking to Umlamuli Mbambo, who is the author of the Winning the Money Game book right here. And we were having this discussion where we were talking, what's the best thing to do? Invest or pay off debt? And I think some of us have been faced with that you must always invest, but also you must pay off debt, get rid of debt as soon as possible. And maybe you must be having some few rands, some few pooler, some few dollars that you have on the side, and you're thinking, what can I do? What's the best thing to do? And that's the conversation we've been trying to have this evening. Welcome back. Sorry, man, we'd lost you there for a second.
Apologies for that.
Not a problem. So I was just trying to explain to say, I don't know if you've got the gist of what I was explaining to say. How do you do it? You've got some money, you've been putting in debt, the percentage is working, but now you've closed off some of those debts, you've written them off, basically you're done. Do you put money into paying off the ones that are left, so more money into paying off those ones, or do you take that extra income that's left over and put it into new investment or into the investments you have? Which way would be the one to direct that extra income?
So a lot of financial educators would then advise that you follow something called the snowball effect.
Okay.
Where now, as you've closed the high penalty ones, then you close. So
the next one.
Then you close the next one, and also appreciate that as you're closing the higher ones, if you were able to afford that 500 rand, and the next one maybe is only 200 rand, vele already you were paying the 200 rand.
Yeah.
Just add the 500 rand on that one.
Okay.
You know, that's the whole snowball effect. And hopefully you get to a place where you then close that out. But something also critical in the snowball effect is to understand why you got in that position in the first place. Because, for example, there are people who would consolidate their debt. And because now that they see that they have a bit of free money, they would then incur further debt.
Yeah,
because this whole debt thing, as far as I see it, it's not purely an academic or numbers issue. It's an emotional and personality issue. Right, because those are the things usually. I mean, obviously, there are emergencies.
Mlad, do we have you on? Ooh, okay, it looks like that line is giving us issues now. Right as we were about to close, it's starting to act up. I'm not too sure what the issue is here. Let's see if we can just raise him up one more time to just wrap up our discussion. This has been The Business Sense. We're at 4 minutes before the hour, 7 o'clock, and thank you so much for being with us. It's been an awesome conversation and the powerful, powerful lessons learned this evening. I'm hoping that you, in your spaces, and you might have been edified, might have been benefited by some of these discussions, some of the points that we've been raised, especially with the expert that we're having on the line, Mlamuli Mbambo, who has been guiding us and giving us invaluable counsel as to what to deal with money. And one of the key things that came out of today's conversation is it's all about education. Get to know what you are doing and be informed about what you want to do with the money. Get to understand what exactly is on the table so that when you go ahead, you make the informed decision. Don't relegate that to somebody else. Even if you're going to say, I'm going to involve an expert, be the coach. You be the one that directs and say, let's do this, let's do that. Mla, I think the line is saying it's time to go to bed now.
Okay, now apologies. We're having a thunderstorm here, so I think it's affecting our network.
Oof, yeah, no, truly, truly. No, I think, Mla, thank you so much for chatting to us. I'm just going to give you about a minute or so to give us what you would want the listener to take out of when all is said and done.
So for me, it's first, congratulations for being in a position where you've got a bit of extra income to try and sort out a few things, and well done for thinking of it in this manner instead of, you know, just blowing it again.
Oh, yes.
But before you put the money in that soil, first learn about that soil, investigate that soil so that you know the best place to depart with that money or to plant that money.
Mm. Amazing. Amazing, amazing. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Mr. Mbambo. Have a blessed evening further. And as always, truly appreciate your time that you spend with us here. And may God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the time. And good evening to you, Derek, and your listeners.
Thank you so much. That you have it, my dear friends. That was the conversation right here on The Business Sense. It's called Personal Finances. And I'm hoping that you really make it personal. And one of the key things, if it's personal, then be honest with yourself. You're not trying to please anybody, to fool anybody. It's about you. Are you getting benefited by these things? And then, like you said there, congratulations and be wise this time around.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
We're going to try and record it without the metronome, okay?
Without that.